claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Go, Jim.
Yeah, I can't hear a word. I mean, I'm not okay. Let me see what I can do, Mitchell.
I don't hear the breaks either. I might have been half a minute late. I think it already ended.
It already ended. All right. Wait, way to go. Hang on 1 second. I'll be right ready to go. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. Let me just say, Marjorie Taylor Greene is calling it out, declaring U.S. aid to Ukraine looks like money laundering scheme. I think she's got it exactly right, that American aid to Kiev is going to NGOs run by friends and families of U.S. politicians. This woman is fantastic. She's a one member of Congress of whom we can be justifiably proud. The financial support America provides Ukraine looks very much like money laundering schemes, Marjorie Taylor Greene has told The Truth with Lisa Booth. The money supposedly destined for Ukrainians ends up in the pockets of nonprofits and NGOs run by people close to politicians in Washington. They want to get $40 billion to Ukraine and have the $40 billion on top of the money that's already been given. That brings it to 53. That's over two-thirds of the State Department's entire budget for the year, referring to the latest aid package going through the U.S. Senate. According to Green, the U.S. officials are doing this to eventually fund the NGOs operated by their families and friends. It is basically like money laundering schemes. Here she's tweeting, because our government is completely corrupt, and I don't say that lightly, it is a serious problem. And my eyes have been opened to it actually serving in Congress. She repeats, Washington also plans to provide $150 million for global agriculture and food programs at a time when U.S. farmers are on the verge of going out of business. That she's spoken to farmers and found they've been hurt so badly by inflation and high fuel costs, chemicals and fertilizer costs are not even breaking even. They're going broke. She's also accusing the U.S. of being hypocritical about its alleged desire to help the Ukrainian people. Washington is pouring money into Ukraine, but is totally ignoring other conflicts around the world, adding, Ethiopia has a civil war right now, for example, with thousands of people killed, millions displaced, but the U.S. isn't paying any attention. It's such an hypocrisy. It's not about saving lives, but it certainly is about Ukraine. She's not the only one concerned about the transparency of U.S. spending when it comes for aid to Ukraine. Last week, a quick vote on the $40 billion Ukraine aid package was blocked by Republican Senator Rand Paul from Kentucky. He demanded a special inspector general be appointed to monitor how the massive aid package is spent. Good for him. Paul insisted his proposal be added to the bill, which would require that the revised legislation go back to the House for another vote after Senate approval. He noticed the latest package would bring total U.S. aid to Ukraine to $60 billion since the conflict began in February, nearly as much as Russia earmarks annually for its entire defense budget. The senator also argued America would have to increase its debt and worsen its inflation to make the aid available to Kiev. Green herself was among the 57 Republican representatives who voted twice against sending financial aid to Ukraine during the crisis. Both aid packages, however, sailed through, receiving overwhelming support in the House, passed 368-57. On Saturday, U.S. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell also assured Ukrainian President Zelensky of U.S. support during his visit. He vowed to get the job done by passing the aid package bill. This, in my opinion, is really embarrassingly bad. It reflects the fact that the United States is acting in a way that's self-serving. We already know, for example, that the Nancy Pelosi's son, John Kerry's son, Mitt Romney's son, Joe Biden's son, all work in Ukraine, and that there are massive deals of corruption going on here without any doubt about it. Meanwhile, we have a huge story here in the Wisconsin State Journal talking about, you know, white supremacy. Joe Biden claiming about rampant white supremacy taking place, but it's all fraudulent, all total nonsense. I've been taking a look at the videos, and I can assure you this is a totally staged event. Let me share, for those who will see the video version, they'll be able to watch. But this was a mini version of what happened in Christchurch, New Zealand, where you had a driver driving around. It's nearly 10 minutes into the video he takes before he walks up to the mosque and starts shooting people. You hear sounds, but there are no shell ejections from the weapon. People fall down. They're already in a clump of bodies in a big room in the mosque before he even comes in. It's all totally staged. Well, we have very similar here in Buffalo. I'm going to play the video, talk about it, and you'll be able to see it in the video version. Here we go. He's driving into the parking lot. He had to drive for 4 hours to get here. Why in the hell would anyone do that? It's crazy. And, of course, it's Topps Friendly Supermarket. Now he's parking. There's some parties there, including a white woman, the first person he shoots. He gets out now. He fires. She falls forward, but she should have fallen backward. She falls forward. Then he fires some shots into the window at another body. He comes in, fires again. There's no ejection of any shells. Then you see more bodies. He's shooting, but there's no blood. There is no blood. Here's especially telling when he points at a body lying down point blank at the head. You get an airburst. The head should have blown apart like a melon. Absolutely blown apart like a melon. Further. All fake. I mean, this is just awful. Meanwhile, let me give you a clip about what happened in New Zealand. They had such a problem faking the shell ejection that it appears in Buffalo they just decided to finesse it entirely. Here's a video of how they photoshopped what happened in New Zealand with the shell casings. Here you see the shooter emptying his magazine on the sidewalk, and the shell casings are ejecting, but they never hit the ground. They disappear in midair. Here they come. They're coming out. They're flying in the air. But in Buffalo, we don't even have that. We don't even have shell casing ejections in Buffalo. Totally fake. Here you see, they don't ever hit the ground. You never hear the tinkle of brass. I mean, this is just embarrassingly bad. They go on to show in this clip how it's done. This is a special fix added after. You have the casings disappearing in midair. This is a physical impossibility for real shell casings. It's an obvious sign of photoshopping. So here before you see a shooter firing with no shell, then they add it. Here he goes again, and all of a sudden, stream of shell casings coming out. Everyone gets it. It's A-OK. New Zealand changes its gun laws after the mass shooting kills 49. All fake, all fake. That's what it's all about. All about changing the laws by manufacturing an event. There you have Ron Johnson slamming Biden for visiting Buffalo after skipping Waukesha. He rebuked Biden for finding the resources to visit Buffalo after refusing to travel to Waukesha. Biden and First Lady Jill were scheduled to visit, where a gunman allegedly killed 10 people. A suspect was an 18-year-old white male. A 40-year-old black career criminal, however, was the one involved in the deadly Christmas attack in Waukesha, who killed six counts of first degree, 71 other counts, but Biden didn't have time to visit Waukesha. Last year, when Daryl Brooks murdered six innocents and injured over 60 during the Waukesha Christmas parade, the White House claimed Biden couldn't go to Waukesha because it would require too many assets and resources. Doesn't the American people have assets and resources? Give us a break. But within hours of the most recent senseless tragedy, the White House found the resources to plan a presidential trip to Buffalo. That's because it reinforces a Democrat need that it's only whites who commit these, not blacks. If he'd gone to Waukesha, it would have emphasized this was a black guy who was led up by a lenient district attorney who'd been financed by George Soros, who doesn't want to enforce the law. He lets a criminal out early. I think this was a no bail case. He was let out early, and then he drives through a Christmas parade. No, no, no. Nothing to see there. Just move along. But in Buffalo, when they got a fake white supremacist shooter, he wants to go up and emphasize that for the public purpose of public relations. In November, then White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said the reason Biden had no plan to visit was that it required a lot of assets and taking community resources, but that's true anywhere a president goes. Her replacement, Karine Jean-Pierre, also defended Biden's absence in Waukesha compared to his immediate visit to Buffalo. I mean, he's visited many communities, Jean-Pierre said. Buffalo, he was, you know, he's able to go tomorrow to Buffalo. That's something important for him to do. Career criminal Daryl Brooks Jr., who was taken into custody following the deadly incident during a Christmas parade in Waukesha on November 21st, however, didn't warrant his traveling to Waukesha. He's now expected to call on Congress to pass gun control legislation when he visits Buffalo. That's another part of the agenda of the Democratic Party. Take attention off of the economy, off of inflation, off of food shortages, off of the, you know, formula, baby formula, off of the massive migration into the United States, which they're trying to convert into a plus by complaining, by contending that the Buffalo shooter was indeed inspired by, you know, right-wing sources. So they're trying to get a twofer or even a threefer out of this. White House officials confirm that Biden will call on Congress to keep weapons of war, of which this is not. Weapons of war are fully automatic. The AR-15 is not fully automatic, so it's not a weapon of war. Keep guns out of the hands of criminals and people who have serious mental illnesses. There are already laws on the books to do that. The point is they want to take guns away from law-abiding citizens so we're unable to defend ourselves. Now, here you have another political benefit. Biden connects Buffalo mass shooting to January 6th. Biden connected the racist mass shooting in Buffalo to the protests of Trump supporters on January 6th. Calling on all Americans to reject white supremacy, the president cited the January 6th riots after calling on all Americans to reject white supremacy because they're making the country look bad. But it's all manufactured. These are all stunts brought to us, compliments of the Democratic Party. And I tell you, Barack Obama is behind this. I have no doubt. It was as president that Obama nullified the Smith-Mundt Act of 1948, which precluded the use of the same techniques of propaganda and disinformation within the United States that were heretofore only allowed without, such as staged events, paid riots and the like, which by the SMIP Modernization Act of 2012, just in time to bring us Sandy Hook. And he'd opened the floodgate, where we've had one after another of these phony stage events. Not just Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing, Orlando and Dallas, Charlottesville, Parkland, Las Vegas, many, many more. We can't allow them to distort America, the real America, Barden claims, referring to white supremacists. We can't allow them to destroy the soul of the nation. He then turned to January 6th. As president of the United States, I travel the world all the time. And other nations ask me, heads, and say, what's going on? What in God's name happened January 6th? What happened in Buffalo? Buffalo just occurred. Biden hasn't made any trip abroad. How can anybody be asking him what happened in Buffalo when he's traveling abroad? This is just ridiculous. More and more lies, but then we're getting an endless stream. It's the exception when we get any sentence that actually happens to be true from this White House or even from the mainstream media. Everything being published about this is phony, fraudulent, and false. The president demanded Americans condemn white supremacy, insisting silence about the issue is compliance. But even Donald Trump was condemning white supremacy at the time of Charlottesville. He was condemning it forthrightly, but the media refused to publish it. We have refused to live in a country where black people going about a weekly grocery shopping can be gunned down by weapons of war deployed in a racist cause, he said. This is the line he wanted to get by staging the Buffalo shooting. Remember, blacks are leaving the Democratic Party in droves, just as are Latinos. They're turning Republican because they're disgusted by what's going on here. Turning Republican. Biden indicated white supremacists were acting out of a type of misguided patriotism. Look, the American experiment in democracy is in danger like it hasn't been in my lifetime. It's in danger this hour, he said. Hate and fear are being given too much oxygen by those who pretend to love America, but who do not understand America. He also proposed doing more to prevent evil content from spreading on the internet. We can address the relentless exploitation of the internet to recruit and mobilize terrorism. We just need to have the courage to do that. To stand up. Meanwhile, Seth Meyer blamed Tucker Carlson for inspiring the Buffalo massacre, but Megyn Kelly issued a blistering rebuke for politicizing the tragedy. Late night host Seth Meyers, I've never watched Seth Meyers, unloaded on Fox News Tucker Carlson Monday night, saying the conservative host helped to inspire the horrific massacre that took the lives of at least 10 people at Buffalo, a supermarket on Saturday. He made the remarks the same day Megyn Kelly hit out at media figures attempting to politicize the tragedy. Meyers addressed the mass killing during Monday night's Late Night with Seth Meyers, saying he believed Tucker was complicit in helping spread a conspiracy theory known as the Great Replacement. NPR defines the theory as stating that non-white individuals are being brought into the United States and other Western countries to replace white voters to achieve a political agenda. But we all know the mass migration at the border has precisely that objective, that migrants are being brought in illegally into the United States by the millions, and they're being transferred all over the country in a deliberate effort to change the demographics. This is not a theory. This is a fact. Meanwhile, with prominent figures on the right embracing and parroting dangerous white nationalist conspiracy theory known as the Great Replacement, it's worth noting, in addition to being deeply racist, bigoted, and dehumanizing, it's also incredibly stupid, Meyer said. How can he say it's incredibly stupid? It's a deliberate policy of the Biden administration to flood the United States with millions of illegals in a deliberate plan to change the demographics of America. We know that. They have admitted it. So how can he claim that it's stupid to point it out? This guy accused Tucker of being guilty of downplaying right-wing domestic terrorism. In 2019, Tucker addressed white supremacist terrorism is small scale, said the movement's combined membership of every white supremacist organization in the country would be able to fit inside a college football stadium. I think Tucker's exactly right. He zeroed in on those remarks, claiming, first of all, a football stadium can fit like 100,000 people, which is a ton of people. If I told you, don't worry, I rounded up all the white supremacists and walked you into there, I don't think your reaction would be few. But remember, I mean, the population of the United States is 330 million. 330 million. So, even if there had been 100,000, I think that's probably a gross exaggeration. Tucker's right on the mark. This guy Myers is just a propagandist. He added, Tucker has openly and repeatedly promoted replacement theory on his show. He's not promoting it. He's pointing out this is what's going on. That's not promoting it. That's demonstrating this is a phenomenon taking place with the sanction and support of the Biden administration. No one is being replaced. There's no capacity limit here. It's not like there's a bouncer only lets two in when two leave. Just think about how breathtakingly dumb the logic is here. No one gets replaced when another person enters a country. But in fact, when you have the VACs taking out millions, we just had a report that there'd been a million dead Americans when it's disabling others, and when they're doing their best to change the voting outcome, in no doubt in key swing states, the number can make a huge difference. Look at the 2,000 mules. The 2,000 mules is showing how all of those who were stuffing the drop boxes in the dead of night were doing so in key swing states that may have, you know, with a number that of ballots they were stuffing just from this little slice of the modes they used to steal the election was already sufficient to change the outcome from Biden to Trump. Already, just what's exposed in 2,000 mules. So when you read in the newspaper about false conspiracy theories about the theft of the election, it's not false, it's true. It's not only true, it's provably true. Watch 2,000 mules for proof. Meanwhile, Mike Lindell had done a three-day marathon elaborating a whole lot of other ways in which the election was stolen. There can be no doubt about it. Meanwhile, during Monday's episode of the Megyn Kelly Show, Megyn said those trying to politicize the shooting are contributing to division. We will not be naming the shooter on the program, consistent with our policy of not naming mass shooters, who went martyr out for infamy and we declined to help. He's pled not guilty, but he also left behind a trove of information, including a 180-page manifesto filled with racist and anti-Semitic commentary. The shooter was white, detailing how and why he picked his target. As I've already mentioned, large segments of that manifesto were lifted directly from the manifesto in Christchurch, New Zealand. This is plagiarism. I mean, they just must have liked so much the way in which they wrote the earlier manifesto for another grossly fraudulent attempted shooting that they just liked it so much of recycling it. And of course, as I've already observed, what we have going on in Buffalo is a mini version of what happened in Christchurch. Some have been quick to point fingers and even place blame on our friend and popular host, Tucker Carlson. It's outrageous. It's wrong, both factually and morally. She's got it right. Become a further outrage, she had it. Why do we have to go to that place immediately on these stories? Why can't we spend two effing minutes mourning the people who are dead and trying to understand we have insane people in this country? We have lunatics. It's a huge country. Megyn, of course, has bought the story, the official narrative, hook, line, and sinker. But she's at least making a game effort to avoid and attack those who are politically exploiting it for their own political agenda. She pointed out there's no way to eradicate the lunatics from the country, and that attempting to politicize such an horrific tragedy will only further divide Americans. People have to inject their politics into everything, and this guy had a racist manifesto. There's no question that doesn't make it Tucker Carlson's fault. Just stop it. I'm not a huge fan of Megyn Kelly. I think she's a bit of an airhead, but here she has risen to the occasion. Now, the Rutherford Institute is very concerned with the administration of law in the United States, and John Whitehead and Nisha Whitehead have authored a very nice piece, Be Ready to Be Muzzled, A Coming War on So-Called Hate Speech. Whoever would overthrow the liberty of a nation must begin by subduing the freedom of speech, observed Benjamin Franklin. Beware of those who want to monitor, muzzle, catalog, and censor speech. Especially be on your guard when the reasons given for limiting your freedoms end up expanding the government's power. In the wake of a mass shooting in Buffalo, carried out by an 18-year-old gunman in military gear, allegedly motivated by fear the white race is in danger of being replaced, there have been renewed calls for social media monitoring, censorship of flag content that could be construed as dangerous or hateful, and limitations on free speech activities, particularly online. As expected, those who want safety at all costs will clamor for more gun control measures, if not an outright ban on weapons for non-military, non-police personnel. That's all of the legal American citizens. Widespread mental health screening of the general population and greater scrutiny of military veterans, more threat assessments and behavioral sensing warnings, more surveillance cameras with facial recognition capability, more see something, say something programs aimed at turning Americans into snitches and spies, more metal detectors and whole body imaging devices at soft targets, more roaming squads of militarized police empowered to do random bag searches, more fusion centers to centralize and disseminate information to law enforcement agencies, and more surveillance of what Americans say and do, where they go, what they buy, and how they spend their time. All of these measures play into the government's hands. As we have learned the hard way, the phantom promise of safety in exchange for restricted or regulated liberty is a false, misguided doctrine that serves only to give the government greater authority to crack down, lock down, and institute ever more authoritarian policies for the so-called sake of national security without objection. Mitchell.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either." Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
I was addressing a very important statement coming from the Rutherford Institute. In continuing, as we have learned the hard way, the phantom promise of safety in exchange for restricted or regulated liberty is a false, misguided doctrine that serves only to give the government greater authority to crack down, lock down, and institute even more totalitarian policies for the so-called sake of national security, without many objections from the citizenry. Add the Department of Homeland Security's Disinformation Governance Board to the mix, empower it to monitor online activity and police so-called disinformation, and you have the makings of a restructuring of a reality straight out of Orwell's 1984, where the Ministry of Truth policies but polices speech and ensures that facts to confirm whatever version of reality the government propagandists embrace. After all, it's a slippery slope from censoring so-called legitimate ideas to silencing truth. Eventually, as George Orwell predicted, telling the truth will become a revolutionary act. If the government can control speech, it can control thought, and in turn can control the minds of the citizens. It's been a long time since free speech was actually free. On paper, at least according to the Constitution, we are technically free to speak. In reality, however, we are only as free to speak as a government official or corporate entity such as Facebook, Google, or YouTube may allow. That's not a whole lot of freedom, especially if you're inclined to voice opinions that may be construed as conspiratorial or dangerous. The steady, pervasive censorship creep, clothed in tyrannical self-righteousness and inflicted upon us by technological behemoths, both corporate and governmental, is techno-fascism, and it does not tolerate dissent. These internet censors are not acting in our best interest to protect us from dangerous disinformation campaigns. They're laying the groundwork to preempt any dangerous idea that might challenge the power elite stranglehold over our lives. The internet, hailed as a super information highway, is increasingly becoming the police state's secret weapon. This policing of the mind is exactly the danger author Jim Keith warned about when he predicted that information and communication sources are gradually being linked together in a single computerized network, providing an opportunity for unheralded control of what will be broadcast, what will be said, and ultimately, what will be thought. What we are witnessing is the modern-day equivalent of book burning, which involves doing away with dangerous ideas, legitimate or not, and the people who espouse them. Where we stand now is at the juncture of old speak, where words have meaning and ideas can be dangerous, and new speak, where only that which is safe and accepted by the majority is permitted. The power elite has made their intentions clear. They will pursue and prosecute any and all words, thoughts, and expressions that challenge their authority. Having been reduced to a cowering citizenry, mute in the face of elected officials who refuse to represent us, helpless in the face of police brutality, powerless in the face of militarized tactics and technology that treat us like enemy combatants on a battlefield, and naked in the face of government surveillance that sees and hears all, we have nowhere left to go and nothing left to say that cannot be misconstrued and used to muzzle us. Yet what a lot of people fail to understand is that it's not just what you say or do that's being monitored, but how you think that is being tracked and targeted. We've already seen this play out on the state and federal level with hate crime legislation that cracks down on so-called hateful thoughts and expressions, encourages self-censoring, and reduces free debate on various subject matter. Where every passing day, we're moving further down the road toward a totalitarian society characterized by government censorship, violence, corruption, hypocrisy, and intolerance, all packaged for our supposed benefit in the Orwellian doublespeak of national security, tolerance, and so-called government speech. Little by little, Americans have been conditioned to accept routine incursions on their freedom. This is how oppression becomes systemic, what is referred to as creeping normality or a death by a thousand cuts. I think that's completely brilliant. Here's something else. Listen to this. What a masterpiece summation of where we're at today.
I never dreamed that I would have to face the prospect of not living in the United States of America, at least not the one I've known all my life. I've never wished to live anywhere else. This is my home, and I was privileged to be born here. But today I woke up, and as I had my morning coffee, I realized that everything is about to change. No matter how I vote, no matter what, I say something evil has invaded our nation, and our lives are never going to be the same. I've been confused by the hostility of family and friends. I look at people I've known all my life, so hate-filled that they agree with opinions they would never express as their own. I think I may have, well, entered the Twilight Zone. We become a nation that has lost its collective mind. You can't justify this insanity. If a guy pretends to be a woman, you're required to pretend with him. Somehow, it's un-American for the census to count how many Americans are in America. Russians influencing our elections are bad, but illegals voting in our elections are good. It was cool for Joe Biden to blackmail the president of Ukraine, but it's an impeachable offense if Donald Trump inquires about it. 20 is too young to drink a beer, but 18 is old enough to vote. People who have never owned slaves should pay slavery reparations to people who have never been slaves. People who have never been to college should pay the debts of college students who took out huge loans for their degrees. Immigrants with tuberculosis and polio are welcome, but you better be able to prove your dog is vaccinated. Irish doctors and German engineers who want to immigrate to the U.S. must go through a rigorous vetting process, but any illiterate gangbangers who jump the southern fence are welcome. $5 billion for border security is too expensive, but $1.5 trillion for free health care is not. If you cheat to get into college, you go to prison, but if you cheat to get into the country, you go to college for free. People who say there's no such thing as gender are demanding a female president. We see other countries going socialist and collapsing, but it seems like a great plan to us. Some people are held responsible for things that happened before they were born, and other people are not held responsible for what they're doing right now. Criminals are caught and released to hurt more people, but stopping them is bad because it's a violation of their rights. And pointing out all this hypocrisy somehow makes us racist. Nothing makes sense anymore. No values, no morals, and no civility. People are dying of a Chinese virus, but it's racist to refer to it as Chinese even though it began in China. We're clearly living in an upside-down world where right is wrong and wrong is right, where moral is immoral and immoral is moral, where good is evil and evil is good, where killing murderers is wrong, but killing unborn babies is A-okay. Wake up, America. The great unsinkable ship, Titanic America, has hit an iceberg, is taking on water, and is sinking fast. Speak up.
I think that's about as wonderful as I've ever heard. That's a marvelous statement. In just a couple of minutes, she manages to lay it all out, what's going on today right here in the USA. Meanwhile, we all know about the shortage of breast milk. Well, guess what? Bill Gates backs lab-grown breast milk startup BioMilk, again, in a $21 million investment. I mean, guess what? We have a shortage of a product that Bill Gates is now going to provide in a simulated version. Meanwhile, here's another stunning report, this time from the expose. Fully vaccinated young adults suffer 73% increase in heart attacks and strokes, 92% higher mortality rate compared to the unvaccinated. And it will only get worse over time as per rising all-cause mortality trends. Official figures show there's been a 67% increase compared to the historical average in the number of persons aged 15 to 44 suffering heart attacks, cardiac arrest, myocarditis, stroke, and other cardiovascular diseases since this age group was first offered the COVID injection in Scotland. Further analysis shows this issue is actually getting worse, with the numbers for 2022 revealing a 73% increase against the historical average. Meanwhile, data published by the Office for National Statistics show that between January 2021 and January 2022, double vaccinated 18 to 39-year-olds in England were on the average 92% more likely to die than unvaccinated young adults of the same age. This is either a terrible coincidence or the smoking gun that proves the damage that COVID injection have done and are doing to the population. Stunning stuff. It's all published, by the way, with all the graphs on my blog at jamesfetzer.org. It is well known now that a possible severe consequence of getting the COVID injection is one may develop either myocarditis or pericarditis, or in some cases, both. We know this because the authorities have had to admit it occurs, although as expected have downplayed it as extremely rare. It probably means it's far more common than people realize. In simple terms, myocarditis is an autoimmune disease causing inflammation of the heart muscle. The inflammation enlarges and weakens the heart, creates scar tissue, and forces it to work harder to circulate blood and oxygen throughout the body. While pericarditis is an autoimmune disease causing inflammation of the pericardium, a sac-like structure with two thin layers of tissue surrounding the heart to hold it in place and help it work. These immune diseases have affected people in the U.S. According to the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, where just 1 to 10% of adverse reactions are actually reported, well known. According to a Harvard study, actually less than 1%. So you could take what they report and multiply it by 100, and you're getting closer to the ballpark. Here's how all myocarditis reported to have varies by years. And if you go up to 2010, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20 through 2020, it's a very small number. It's maybe in a couple hundred. But all of a sudden in 2021, it leaps up to in excess of 12,000. In fact, I'd say that it's on the order of 12,000 more than we had in all the preceding years. Here's how those unprecedented, meaning, this is a 1,200% increase. I mean, this is absolutely staggering what's going on. Here's how those unprecedented amounts of cases of myopericarditis rubra have been distributed by age. As you can see, the two autoimmune conditions are much more likely to occur in younger age groups, where the UK medicine regulator has admitted this to be the case. There's also been reporting of similar cases internationally following receipt of the Pfizer, BioNTech, and Moderna vaccines. These have occurred most frequently in younger men aged 40 years and younger, and within 10 days after the second dose. Most of the cases were wild and individually typically recovered within a short time with symptomatic treatment and rest, while reports of myocarditis and pericarditis after vaccination with AstraZeneca have also been received, there's insufficient evidence to recommend similar warnings for that vaccine. Healthcare professionals should be alert to the signs and symptoms of myocarditis and pericarditis. Confirmation of diagnosis of these conditions typically requires targeted diagnostic procedures such as electrocardiograms, cardiac imaging, and biomarker analysis. And it's also important to exclude other potential causes for the symptoms. Treatment of more symptomatic patients will occasionally require relevant expert follow-up that might need detailed cardiac imaging to determine the nature of the condition. Advice for the public. Vaccinated individuals should be advised to seek immediate medical attention should they experience new onset of chest pain, shortness of breath, or symptoms of disturbance of cardiac rhythm. You may have noticed how the UK medicine regulator, the MHRA, stated how most of the cases of myocarditis were mild. So nothing to worry about? Unfortunately not. A mild case of myocarditis or pericarditis does not exist. You only have one heart. It is incapable of regenerating or repairing once damage has been done. Ongoing cardiovascular medicine or even a heart transplant may be needed. Overall, myocarditis, which can cause dilated cardiomyopathy, is thought to account for up to 45% of heart transplants in the United States today. Myocarditis can permanently damage your heart muscle, possibly causing heart failure. Untreated myocarditis can damage your heart's muscles so it can't pump blood effectively. In severe cases, myocarditis-related heart failure may require a ventricular assist device or a heart transplant. Heart attack or a stroke. If your heart's muscle is injured and can't pump blood, the blood that collects in your heart can form clots. If a clot blocks one of your heart's arteries, you can have a heart attack. If a blood clot in your heart travels to an artery leading to your brain, you can have a stroke. Rapid or irregular heart rhythm, arrhythmias. Damage your heart muscle can cause an arrhythmia, sudden cardiac death. Certain serious arrhythmias can cause your heart to stop beating, sudden cardiac arrest. It's deadly if not treated immediately. Surprise, surprise. Moreover, myocarditis decreases lifespan for all sufferers, and in many cases significantly decreases lifespan. A child's life expectancy with myocarditis is around 10 years from diagnosis. All that being said, the following data has been published by Public Health Scotland should come as no surprise. Public Health Scotland has a not very well-known database presenting figures on the wider impact to health service due to measures imposed in the name of COVID. The database is called COVID-19 Wider Impacts on the Healthcare System. We have previously researched the data contained within the database to reveal a huge upsurge in cases of ovarian cancer across Scotland since the introduction of the COVID injections. It just so happens a study conducted by Pfizer reveals the mRNA injection accumulates in the ovaries. But this time we decided to analyze the data for cardiovascular cases across Scotland. Cardiovascular diseases are conditions that affect the structures or functions of your heart, such as abnormal heart rhythms or arrhythmias, aorta disease or Marfan syndrome, congenital heart disease, coronary heart disease, which is narrowing of the arteries, deep vein thrombosis and pulmonary embolism, heart attack, heart failure, heart muscle disease, cardiomyopathy, heart valve disease, myocarditis, pericardial disease, peripheral vascular disease, rheumatic heart disease, stroke, vascular disease, blood vessel disease. For the out-of-hours category and the ambulance service category, PHS provides a breakdown by age, meaning we can assess the number of cardiovascular cases among adults aged 15 to 44. Here's how Public Health Scotland presents the data on the number of cases requiring out-of-hours care across Scotland. And you can see this graph, which is available on my blog at jamesfetzer.org. As you can see above, the weekly number of cases have been highest among 15 to 44-year-olds since the beginning of the pandemic, but the gap between all other age groups suddenly got much bigger, much larger in 2021. This is confirmed by the second graph, which shows a percentage change in cardiovascular cases against a 2018-2019 historical average. From around July of 2021, there's been a huge spike in cardiovascular cases among 15 to 44-year-olds that should set off alarm bells ringing and deserves further attention. So that's exactly what we gave it. We extracted the data and produced a series of charts in order to present the figures provided by Public Health Scotland much more clearly and to attempt to understand the severity of what's been occurring since the introduction of the injections. The following chart shows the number age 15 to 44 requiring out-of-hours treatment for cardiovascular cases per week from the week ending 4 July 2021 to the week ending 20 Feb 2022, as well as a 2018-19 historical average per week in the same age group. And here you can see the stunning increase. I mean, it's at least a 50% increase. The historical average that there have been anywhere from around 60 to just over 100 cardiovascular cases among 15 to 44-year-olds requiring out-of-hour treatment across Scotland. But the data for 2021 and 2022 shows there's been anywhere from around 110 cases to 185 cardiovascular cases among 15 to 44-year-olds requiring out-of-hours treatment. So the number of cases have essentially doubled. The following chart shows the number of people aged 15 to 44 requiring an ambulance for cardiovascular cases per week from the week ending 4 July 2021 to the week ending 21 November 2021, the most up-to-date data, as well as a 2018-19 historical average per week in the same age group. And here we have another chart. The historic average shows there have been anywhere from around 185 to just over 250 persons age 15 to 44 requiring an ambulance for cardiovascular cases per week across Scotland. But the data for 2021 and 2022 shows there have been anywhere from around 290 to 390 age 15 to 44 requiring an ambulance for cardiovascular cases per week. So cases haven't quite doubled, but they've still increased quite dramatically. The following chart shows percentage change in the number of people aged 15 to 44 requiring out-of-hours treatment for cardiovascular cases per week from the week ending 4 July 2021 to the week ending 20 February 2022 compared to the 2018 to 2019 historical average per week in the same age group. Here we can see the number of cases requiring out-of-hours care has been higher throughout the entire period, ranging from a 35% increase in a single week to a staggering 117% increase in a single week compared to the historical average. The following shows a percentage change in the number age 15 to 44 requiring an ambulance per week from the week ending 4 July 2021 to the week ending 21 November 2021, 2018 to 2019 compared to the historical average per week in the same age group. This is stunning stuff. Absolutely stunning stuff. Just don't have any doubt about what's going on here. This is a very systematic, massive effort to murder a high percentage of the world's population. And sad to say, the Biden administration is right in their pitching. We know that the CDC has sold us out. We know the FDA has sold us out. We know the NIH has sold us out. And God forbid, we know the World Health Organization has sold us out. And by moving forward with a global pandemic treaty, there's an attempt being made right now, a vote to be taken this month, that would grant the World Health Organization superiority to the sovereignty of the various individual states, some 194 different nations, to manage their healthcare policies independent of their sovereignty. This is completely outrageous. What we are seeing in an open, blatant fashion is the manner in which the Rothschild banking industry, by way of the World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab, who is himself a Rothschild, and a host of aiders and abettors, including, of course, Bill Gates, Tony the Rat Fauci, and many, many others, including Francis Collins at the NIH, have been subverted and sabotaged, where it appears by being given massive royalty benefits, they have been completely subverted and taken control of by the big pharma that makes massive profits on this. This is killing for fun and profit, murder for fun and profit. Have no doubt about it. That's what's taking place. And because we have no precedent at all they're using the stooge Biden, the complete patsy, in order to implement policies that are as destructive to the United States as any ever in our history. And they're going about it nonstop. And you can count on them fabricating more of these fake events to take a fight to defend ourselves. The second, we'll be right back after this break.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet?
I hope.
We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, surprise, surprise, will wonders never cease? The FDA now says COVID should be treated like the flu. Remember, as we've explained many, many times, as Edward Hendry and John Rappaport have so consistently and thoroughly pointed out, there were 38 million cases of the flu before the pandemic, which suddenly shrank to 2,000. You think we just lost track of 39,898,000 cases of the flu that just go away? No, they were relabeled as COVID. So treating it like the flu is, of course, appropriate. It was always appropriate. Should have been how it was dealt with in the beginning. There should have been no lockdown, no social distancing, no mask mandates, no closing of schools, no distant education, no shutting down of small businesses. The consequences have been calamitous. Here we have now from the FDA. American citizens will have to accept COVID as a new respiratory virus on a par with influenza. We all knew it's a new respiratory virus, but now they're telling us it's on a par with influenza, says FDA Commissioner Robert Califf. COVID-19 will be around for the foreseeable future, according to FDA Commissioner, Principal Deputy Commissioner Janet Woodcock, and top vaccine official Dr. Parek Marks. In the Journal of the American Medical Association, they wrote that COVID would require yearly vaccines targeting the most dangerous variations of the virus. I don't believe that for a second. Increased COVID vaccine doses administered this autumn, around the time of the regular influenza vaccine, can potentially prevent vulnerable persons from hospitalization and death. I don't believe that. It will have the opposite effects. This is all bullshit. No one should believe anything coming from the CDC, the FDA, the NIH or the WHO, they have all discredited themselves 100%. If it happens to be positive, you can rest assured that's coming from a source that would never admit anything positive unless it had no choice. Thus suggesting it should be treated on a par with a flu, that I accept. But the idea of having annual vaccines for COVID, no, absolutely not. Bullshit. The official said widespread vaccines, infection-induced immunity, and the availability of effective treatments may diminish the consequences of future epidemics. Remember, the WHO wants to have the ability to declare pandemics and dictate how they are treated with on a global scale. This is as outrageous as it gets. It's one world government by way of medicine, fake medicine, one world government. However, it's time to recognize that the SARS-CoV-2, the virus that caused COVID, is a new normal. And of course, we know the SARS-CoV-2 virus has never been isolated and identified. So we know everything we're being told about it is bullshit. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention released data showing that while instances have increased marginally in the United States, they're still a tiny fraction of the cases recorded in mid-January when the seven-day average was roughly 800,000 per day. The seven-day average was around 68,000 as of May 6. The virus is expected to circulate globally for the foreseeable future alongside other prevalent respiratory viruses like influenza. This information differs from what was said by public health experts in the years 2020 and 2021. For example, current White House COVID-19 advisor Tony the Rat said in late October of 2020 that President Trump's remarks when he compared COVID to the flu were inaccurate. Fauci said it wasn't correct to make the equivalency. In December of 2021, the Rat told CBS News, Americans would likely have to deal with COVID the same way they will with influenza. The most dangerous variant seems to be Fauci's inconsistent statements, and Trump was right. Yes. Meanwhile, Sandy Hook lawsuits against Alex Jones are on a track to resume. I've sought to intervene in these lawsuits. No one wants to know that nobody died at Sandy Hook. It's absolutely stunning. The Sandy Hook family's lawsuits against InfoWars host and conspiracy theorist Alex Jones, calling the 2012 Newtown school shooting a hoax, appear poised to resume soon based on agreements revealed Friday in the bankruptcy case of some of Jones' companies. The bankruptcy filings of InfoWars, Prison Planet TV, and IW Health last month delayed the lawsuits filed in Texas and Connecticut. Jones has already lost the defamation lawsuits, and filings came a week before a jury in Texas was set to begin considering how much money Jones should pay the families of victims in the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting. Well, the legitimate answer to that is nothing, of course. Alex, alas, has been on both sides. He did originally expressed skepticism, thought it was fake, about which he was 100% correct, but he subsequently qualified himself and denied that they were fake, now said it was real and kids died. He has lost defamation lawsuits, but they were all settled on procedural grounds. No lawsuit in the United States has addressed the issue of whether anyone actually died at Sandy Hook. Where mine was the closest to come to it, as I'm going to explain, they utilized the very peculiar rules for summary judgment in Wisconsin in order to deprive me of what ought to have been a slam dunk on my behalf. I would mention, in addition, I've sought to intervene in these lawsuits, but the parties on both sides have opposed, including the Remington settlement. You'd think Remington was eager to give away $73 million without even bothering to determine whether or not the predicate of the entire case, to wit, that 20 kids and 6 adults had died on Sandy Hook was or was not true. They simply finessed it. It's outrageous what's going on here across the board. Meanwhile, on Friday, lawyers in the bankruptcy case said the families will be removed as creditors and InfoWars and Prison Planet TV will be removed as defendants in the Texas and Connecticut defamation cases. The state cases would then continue against Jones and his largest money-making company, Free Speech Systems, neither of which filed for bankruptcy. It was not immediately clear when those cases will resume. The lawyer's comments came during a hearing in U.S. bankruptcy court in Texas. Kyung Lee, a lawyer for Jones Companies, said the bankruptcy case will continue because they have other creditors. A hearing, however, remains scheduled for May 27th on whether the bankruptcy case should be dismissed. And by the way, I'm seeking to intrude into these bankruptcy cases as well. Intervene. The Sandy Hook families that questioned the legitimacy of the filing, saying they were meant only to delay the defamation lawsuits, claims that Jones lawyers deny. The shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown killed 20 children and 6 educators, if you believe the official narratives. Meanwhile, I have submitted a petition for a writ of certiorari to the United States Supreme Court as of yesterday, which was my due date. I had 90 days to file after the final decision was made, in this case by the Supreme Court of Wisconsin, which denied the denial made by the Fourth Court of Appeals in Wisconsin. But the Supreme Court of Wisconsin did not offer an opinion. They merely declined to review my request for them to look at the case. Having offered no opinion, there's no opinion to contest with the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Thus, the highest court in Wisconsin, whose opinion I'm contesting, is the Fourth Court of Appeals. I am proceeding pro se, absent an attorney. The fact of the matter is that the judgments against me are massive, but the legal expenses that have been included, which is part of why they bring these phony lawsuits, has accumulated to the extent that I'm still underwater financially, which is why I am and remain grateful for those who contribute to my givesendgo.com/fundingfetzersuit. Now you know more about how it has evolved. Beginning, this was a First and Second Amendment suit because my freedom of speech and freedom of the press were being subverted and that I was given no opportunity to present my evidence in the county circuit court, where during the scheduling conference, which was conducted by telephone, the presiding judge declared that whether or not Sandy Hook had occurred, as the official narrative declares, was not relevant to the accuracy or the truthfulness of the death certificate, a version of which I had published in the book, in that I would not be allowed to go down that rabbit hole, that I could not present evidence in the court that nobody had died at Sandy Hook, which would make the question of whether a death certificate for an alleged decedent at that event was authentic, a no-brainer. Obviously, if nobody died at Sandy Hook, then a death certificate for anyone claiming they died at Sandy Hook would have to be fabricated, fake, or phony, as I had declared in the book. Now, the death certificate I published in the book and the very different death certificate that was attached to the complaint both declared that the decedent had died at Sandy Hook on 14 December 2012 of multiple gunshot wounds. How in the world, one might ask, could a circuit court judge in Wisconsin declare that evidence I had that no one had died at Sandy Hook not be relevant to the accuracy or truthfulness of a death certificate declaring that the party, the purported decedent, had died at Sandy Hook on that day in that place with multiple gunshot wounds. The case was bizarre from the beginning. Not only that, but the death certificate I had published, which was provided to my research colleague Kelly Watt, by none other than the plaintiff in this case, who describes himself as Leonard Posner, had no file number, had no town certification, and no state certification. It was bereft of certification. It was an incomplete death certificate that had no state or town certification and had no file number. Nevertheless, in the complaint, it asserted that the differences between the death certificate I had published and the death certificate that was attached to the complaint were not materially relevant. That's simply absurd. Material relevance concerns aspects of a situation that make a difference to legal aspects of a case. Obviously, whether a document is or is not a bona fide death certificate is going to depend on it being a complete death certificate, where an incomplete death certificate is no more legitimate than an incomplete driver's license. Suppose the police are asking a suspect, someone they've stopped for their driver's license, and it turns out to have no driver's license number and no state stamp or certification. No one in the world would imagine that was a legitimate driver's license. It would be obvious it was a fake, a phony, or a fabricated. Similarly with death certificates. If it doesn't have a file number, town, or state certification, it's obviously incomplete and a fabrication, a fake. I believed I had a slam dunk case here on my hands. I believed there would be no doubt about it once I presented the evidence. But it turns out that in the state of Wisconsin, judges are allowed the latitude to determine what facts are or are not reasonable and can, in essence, manufacture an outcome in however way they prefer to see it come out. This was a matter of which I was oblivious, completely unaware at the time. I went very vigorously about defending my case. No doubt I will share with you more than I am sharing right now because I want to give you an introduction to what's going on here. Now, since I went to the Wisconsin Supreme Court all the way, I appealed the circuit court decision. It was rejected. I appealed it to the Court of Appeals. It was rejected. I went to the Supreme Court. It was rejected. And now contemplating going to the United States Supreme Court, after giving a rather thorough evaluation of the issues, I realized it was the anomalousness of the summary judgment procedure in Wisconsin that worked so massively against me. So what I want to do is give you a sketch. I'm going to be publishing the whole petition on my blog. I'll no doubt be updating on the givesungo.com website. But it turns out you're only permitted to submit to the U.S. Supreme Court if no other courts or administrative remedies are available. And that indeed is the case here. There are no other courts or administrative remedies available to the petitioner. There is nothing pending that would prevent the issue of a writ of certiorari. Constitutional and statutory provisions involve 7th Amendment to the United States Constitution. In suits at common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise reexamined in any court of the United States and according to the rules of the common law. In other words, you have a right to a trial of jury by a jury of any controversy exceeding more than $20. Well, my goodness, it wound up that I was saddled with $450,000 in punitive damages. And then when I protested what was going on here and sought to locate an impeachment witness, because I was convinced that the party who was posing as Leonard Posner was not, in fact, Leonard Posner, I was saddled with contempt and wound up adding another $650,000. That's $200,000 more than I was hit with for the alleged defamation. Also involved here is the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor to deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the law. Well, get this. It turns out that the summary judgment rules or procedures in Wisconsin are completely different than those in other states. That means, had I been subjected to a summary judgment in another state, such as Texas, for example, the outcome would have been entirely different. Because there were disputed facts in the case, because I was asserting nobody died at Sandy Hook, and the plaintiff was asserting people had died, including his purported son at Sandy Hook, the opposition, the dispute over the most basic issues, including, of course, the authenticity of the death certificate, was blatant. It was as obvious, as egregious as it could possibly be, and yet, by virtue of the peculiarities of the summary judgment procedure in Wisconsin, the judge was able to massage the facts and make out to be that there was no dispute over the facts, which is the only condition under which he would be allowed to render a summary judgment. Summary judgment is only applicable when both parties agree on the facts. If there's a disagreement on the facts, it has to go to a jury for resolution. Juries decide facts. Judges only apply the law. Except in Wisconsin, judges, given the peculiarities of summary judgment procedures in this particular state, are allowed to determine the facts as well. Thus, in essence, I was subjected to a non-jury trial under the guise of a summary judgment. Also involved here is a statutory provision, Wisconsin State Statute 802.08 on summary judgment. Questions presented. Now, in any suit you're submitting to the United States Supreme Court, you have to identify the question the court is being asked to address. Here is the questions presented. May rules of summary judgment vary throughout the states, allowing the Wisconsin judiciary to conduct and affirm a non-jury trial under the pretense of a summary judgment proceeding, the process of which violates all the rules of summary judgment in Texas, depriving Wisconsin citizens of their equal rights to a trial by jury and due process under the 7th and 14th Amendments, and further allowing a Wisconsin judge to determine the validity of major national events through unsound summary judgment methodology? The argument is very thorough and compelling, and you'll find it when I publish. Here I'm only going to share for now the conclusion. The petitioner does not appeal to this court on their own right, but upon the duty of this court to enforce a 7th Amendment guarantee of the right to a trial by jury and a 14th Amendment equal right to due process of all Americans, no matter how unreasonable they are. Dr. Fetzer has demonstrated clearly how the state high courts can disagree on their summary judgment rules and their application, depriving some of their right to trial by jury. has further shown that the four-step Wisconsin summary judgment methodology neither protects the non-movement's right to trial. That would be the defendant, for the plaintiff is the movement. The non-movement's right to trial by jury nor expedites a rapid and efficient determination for the movement. This court should establish a standard for all states on how to safeguard the right of the non-movement and apply the notion of reasonableness and genuineness related to facts, inferences, and issues. The Supreme Court of the United States should grant this petition for writ of certiorari and set aside the Posner versus Fetzer decision and issue an opinion that will assure that summary judgment proceedings throughout America equally protect the right to due process by a trial by jury. The high-profile nature of this case ultimately drew attention to the flaw in a summary judgment methodology of Wisconsin that all citizens of that state presently suffer regardless of the magnitude of their cases. Finally, it is repugnant to human nature that one judge, by the perversion of summary judgment principles, may determine as a matter of law that a major event took place exactly as reported by private media companies and one plaintiff, while the defendant provides a plethora of evidence to the contrary and is deprived of a trial by jury to defend himself and his evidence. To knowingly allow this to continue is a sign that the great American experiment of liberty by self-government has ended. I agree, of course. That's my petition, and it gets it right. And I'm going to be sharing more. And everyone who is inclined to support me, check out givesungo.com/fundingfetzer. I need your help to cover the legal expenses. And if the court grants this writ, this request to be reviewed by the court, then the additional legal expenses will be substantial. I had enough from GiveSendGo, fortunately, to file the case to do the printing and mailing up to this point in time. But take a look at this case. I think you'll find it's really a powerful case and very important for the Constitution of the United States, one which convinced the Supreme Court of the United States ought to grant and review for the benefit of the American people. It's a perfect case for them to decide. So,
take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, I'm very glad to take your calls, of course, and the number 540-352-4452. Mitchell will field your call and get you on the air. As frequently happens, Bruce from Texas is on the line. Bruce, share your thoughts.
Yes, sir. You know, I wish you the best of luck with your filing. It's pretty damn obvious. If you don't have the funds or are short on funds to defend yourself, how do they expect to collect a financial settlement in the sum that they're asking for? It's total
Yeah, of course. The point is I just have this hanging over my head for the duration of my life. I don't believe it accrues to such a state as I might have. I mean, my net worth is a fraction of what those suits amount to, which is, of course, over $1.1 million. Had my life been different in certain respects at certain key junctures, maybe I would have been better off financially at this late stage in my life. But we're dealing with the reality of the history, and in a way, the fact that I have no assets for them to collect has moved them to try to seize control of the book, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, where I'm convinced that the lawsuit was brought in the first place to try not only to tarnish me as a, you know, public relations stunt, to cause me, penalize me by having to go through all the costs and expense of conducting this trial, which is run up, I don't know, let's see, close to 100 thou, I'd say at this point already, close to 100 thou, where I've paid off, I think about 40, 45, but I still have a huge chunk hanging over my head, which I intend to pay off. But because I have no assets, they're able to seize the home, my retirement account, my Social Security are not vulnerable to attachment. They're trying to go after the books and four domain names, but it just turns out that although at the time I gave a, I was examined about my financial assets and my wife was with me at the time, I believed I had an ownership of Moonrock Books. It turns out that when we turned it over to Dave Gehary as a publisher, that Dave Gehary became the owner, and it was simply a false belief on my part that I still had ownership, which I've discovered now when they sought to seize these assets, because I own none of them. I own none of them. So it's a very odd kind of case. On the other hand, I had sincerely but mistakenly testified I did have ownership. And so now I'm having to go through the legal hassle. I've had to hire yet another attorney to get all this straight. And I'm hoping it's all been cleared away because we've done a massive amount of research to establish that, in fact, I have no ownership in any of the properties thereafter, which include the first edition of Nobody Died, the PDF, the banned edition, and the second edition, the latter three of which are owned by Moonrock Books, the first of which was owned by CreateSpace. And when Amazon banned the book, it was essentially nullified. And then they had cited four domain names, one of which is owned by Dave Gehary, namely jamesfetzer.org, but the other three of which I do not own, two of which are available to the public if anyone wanted to pick them up, one of which is owned by another party. So, you know, I just don't have any assets for them to collect. I do have an in-ground recreational trailer out by Rock Lake in Lake Mills, Minnesota. It's actually a charming situation, but the value of that is not very much, and they sought to sell it, but they didn't get any bids. It's just a peculiar situation. But you're absolutely right, Bruce. I mean, you know, I don't have the money to pay for attorneys, which is why I had to apply to be pro se. You've got to show you can't afford to hire an attorney, and my case is actually pretty strong. So it turns out in my initial submission, I omitted the fact that I have those massive liens against me for $1.1 million plus. So I'm adding an additional page, an addendum to submit today to add that to the record, because I overlooked that there was an opportunity, really a requirement to state that. So I'm now adding that to the mix. But there you go, Bruce, yeah. You're right. No, I mean, but it gave me the opportunity. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. There's a little bit of a delay. It's apparent to me that they just revel in torture, psychological torture, and they're making an example out of you.
That's right.
That's right. All the time, you know.
That's right.
That lady that made that song about Mr. Schaefer, you know, they tortured her. They put her in jail. You know, anyone who denies the Holocaust, Sandy Hook is an American Holocaust with the same players, with the same tribe is involved. Let's be honest. You know, let's be honest about it.
It comes up intermittently. This is really a Barack Obama, Joe Biden, Eric Holder operation. Eric Holder, back in 1995, told a National Democratic Women's Conference in Washington, D.C., that we were going to have to brainwash the American people to change their attitude about guns. Eric Holder traveled to Connecticut, met with the governor on the 27th of November, just weeks before the event, and let him know what was going on. So Eric Holder was a contact with Connecticut, and I surmise he had a major role in all of this. And then there were all the participants in the community, and the Connecticut State Police, believe it or not, were running the op behind the scenes and taking photographs, a lot of which are very, very damning. And it's really a fascinating case. I think they were glad to have the opportunity to sue me in Wisconsin, because the way it's set up, you turn the judge into a virtual advocate for the movement, for the plaintiff, by trying to bring the defendant's facts into alignment with a movement, which was a bit of a trick in this case, because I even had two, not one, but two forensic document experts who were attesting that I was correct and that, you know, my sentences were not false, which is a necessary condition for the defamation. but where I'm under a court order that I cannot even reaffirm what I published in the book. I mean, it's really extraordinary. So we'll see what happens. I believe that you will have the opportunity to see the petition I've submitted, because I will be publishing it in the next few days, and make a judgment for yourself. Paul has also joined us. Paul, go ahead. Give us your thoughts.
This is Reuben Vabner calling.
Very clever, very clever. Yes, I believe the party who came to Wisconsin and testified under the name of Leonard Posner is, in fact, Reuben Vabner. I mean, it's fascinating, Paul. You pick right up on that. Very, very good. And you've obviously kept good close track of this case as it's evolved. Go ahead, more.
Well, I was just driving around. I'm actually delivering auto parts here for a gig I just started recently, and I got to tell you, as I drive around, I'm uttering racial slurs all day long.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt, no doubt. I mean, it's just crazy how they try to turn everything into race. See, they obviously had some social psychologist do a study and try to figure out, given the history of the United States, what is there a fault line? And they believe the fault line was derivative of the Civil War and the institution of slavery. So we have all this ludicrous stuff trying to exaggerate racial tensions. I mean, my God, if America were a racist state, how could we have ever elected a black man president of the United States? Not just once, but twice. And we were all very moved. You know, the vast majority of the nation was very moved. But he seems to be a complete stooge of the CIA. He's been operating in a very bad way, and many of us believe he's calling the shots about the disinformation board and all that. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I would just say that there would have been plenty of people that would have put you right on who and what Obama was way before you got elected. But you likely wouldn't have listened to them then because you weren't sufficiently awake. Well, now you're awake. So, you know, I again support, you know, you, who you are, what you're doing. I mean, you're a one-man army. You're a one-man legal team. Okay, you're fighting a good fight. But what you're not aware of, and I've tried to tell you before, but it just, you can't really do it in a short phone call or even, you know, in an email or two. It would be pages and pages and pages. But there's a man that I mentioned to you before. He's been on Scorpio and Giuseppe's show, Roger Sales. And for years, he has been pointing out the fact that you're not entitled to these constitutional protections you think you are, and you're not entitled to the common law as a U.S. citizen, which is basically a U.S. person. You're essentially a corporate fiction. When you got that suit and it was stylized with your name in all capital letters, they were suing your corporate fiction entity. And so the minute that you reply in that capacity, you essentially have taken cognizance of this. And what the courts are going to do, no matter the political nature of this, and believe me, this is such a hot political potato that's vital to Jewish power. They would never allow anything to go forward in the courts that would expose this. And we both know this is true. We all applaud you for making this effort. But here's what I'm going to tell you is there's something I mentioned to you before. It's known as silent judicial notice. And it's something they don't tell you. They don't say to you. So no matter how great your arguments are, and they're solid. We live in it's a parallel court system, and there's a parallel universe. And what they want us to believe is that the fraud that they've perpetrated upon us is the reality. And as long as people are playing in that reality, in other words, going to court, answering these complaints, again, they have sued you. They are suing you in your corporate fiction capacity. And the minute that you answer in that capacity and take cognizance of it, then the game is on. And believe me when I tell you, there's no argument that you're going to make that will prevail. I'm sorry to say, it's just the reality of the case, and I've tried to tell you in so many words. You know, all that being said, I admire you. I think that you've done a great service to, you know, I guess anybody who's ever listened to you and the American public, trying to wake everybody up to what's happening. And I don't like what's occurring to you in the legal system. But again, it's one of those things that is predictable because decades ago, people exposed this. There really are no Article III courts anymore, and you're not entitled to the common law unless you are an American national, not a U.S. person or a U.S. citizen, which there's all kinds of paperwork they have already there where you've claimed to be a U.S. citizen. And that's how they got you. And that came right out of the slavery, right out of the Civil War, where people, you may have heard people say that they fought the Civil War to make us all slaves. Well, actually, that's true. But what they did is they passed the 14th Amendment to make us all slaves. So anyway,
well, it's a fascinating line of argument, Paul. But when you're confronted with a lawsuit, you have two choices. You can move to dismiss or you can answer. And because I believed it was so important to get all the evidence that I'd accumulated through my collaborative research and publishing the book into the public domain, I saw this suit as an opportunity for presentation to the court system, to the public, because court proceedings are public documents. So I took the opportunity. I'm not quite sure what you would have had me do under those circumstances. If I had, I could have moved to dismiss, but you're suggesting even moving to dismiss would be acknowledging the authority of the system. And I'm at a loss. I'm at a loss as to what you would have had me do under those circumstances.
Okay, so there are people who would have suggested, and this is one of these things that I have also followed as well. The minute that you accept something, okay, in other words, whatever it is, you get a piece of mail and you retain it, you don't immediately return it, okay, then that's in the law, that's known as acceptance, okay? So I don't know how you were served, if you were served in person or served by certified mail. If you're served by certified mail and they were asking for a signature, you should have never signed it. You should have rejected it. If you got served in person, you should have immediately put it in an envelope, right, and put a little statement in there that it was not your intent to retain, and the documents that you received in error have no legal meaning to you and you don't understand them and you are returning them. And this is what's known as return of presentment. It was taught by Howard Griswold and his legal group, and there's other people that have used this successfully on tickets and taxes and so forth. I myself have used it on tickets before, you know, and I've made clear on the show before that yeah. So anyway, it's just, the minute that you take it, accept it, and keep it. Yeah.
Well, you don't know what you're being served with until you look at it, for God's sake. I mean, look, this was a woman. This was a woman who came to my home. I mean, I was out going to get the mail when she showed up. She said she'd never seen anyone so happy to receive a lawsuit because I felt it was an opportunity to get all this evidence into the public domain. So, look, I mean, it was how I handled it at the time, given my state of understanding, and I have no idea what would have been the outcome had I followed your suggestion. And I'm not discounting what you say. I'm not debunking it. I'm saying I was acting on the basis of my understanding and belief about the situation I was in. And we'll see what happens.
Can I jump in before I go?
Yeah, Bruce.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Anyway, this shooting there in Buffalo.
Yeah.
You recall the movie Cobra, 1986, Sylvester Stallone?
Vaguely, I haven't seen it, I may have seen it way back when, but it doesn't leap to mind. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, it was directed by George Cosmatos. He's an Israeli Greek. Okay, the dual citizen, and he also co-directed Exodus, from 1960. So it shows his roots. And anyhow, it shows the nutbag going to a grocery store, shooting people randomly. You know, and it's just the way of the new world, you know. It's kind of like a flaky, a white supremacist type revolutionary group. And Cobra goes in there and, you're a disease, I'm the cure, and pulls his 45 out of his pants. But it seems like it's scripted. All these things are scripted, And
Of course they're scripted. I mean, that's not a question. Of course they're scripted. I mean, you don't even have any shell casings being ejected from the weapon. What could be more fake than that? You cannot fire a weapon, an AR 15 style and not have shell casings ejected if you're actually firing rounds. It was a noisemaker. It was a toy gun. And I suspect they wanted to have it live stream because they were doing a little tweaking because they had these bullet holes seeming to appear in the windows, and they were surprisingly clear and well-defined given the quality of the video. Something funny was going on there. Now, I'm told there are weapons that can actually fire or merely make sound just by flipping a switch. So I don't say that's impossible. I don't think it's likely. Those didn't look like real bullet holes from a real gun. They look like these little stickers you can put on a car that make it look like a car has been shot up with bullet holes, which I did in the San Bernardino thing. They had this car just plastered with all these little stickers to make it look like bullet holes. I think wherever they rented or borrowed the car, they didn't want it to be shot up so they could, sell it as a used car. But the fact is, this whole thing is so blatant, so phony, so fake. The first woman falls forward. She should have fallen back. All these others, the bodies are on the ground before he even fires. When you're inside, he shoots at a guy from point blank range right at his head. And you can see the air blowing back his hair, but his head doesn't blow apart like a melon, which would have happened had it been real. The whole thing is totally fake from A to Z. Yeah. Yeah. Paul.
It's all super obvious for anybody who looks at it. And let me get going here. I want to just finish up real quick if I can. And again, you've listened very well for the most part, and I appreciate it. And I'm going to address something you just said where you said all you did was, something or other. And my response was going to be, as do millions upon millions of people across this country, because they don't know any better. And I'm not faulting you. I'm trying to make you aware. But just like I said a minute ago, this thing is obvious to anybody who looks at it. Well, once you absorb the sort of thing I'm telling you, and again, you can do it with probably 15 to 20 pages of text, and there's a lot more that's been written about this, but just imagine it's really this simple, Jim. It really is. When she handed it to you and you accepted it, in other words, you took it in your hand, that was it. Okay, you should have just let her put it. I'm not touching that. That's not for me. And then she would have had a choice. She could have just put it on the ground. If she served you in person, you were under no obligation to accept what she gave you. I'm just telling you this is the way it works. They don't tell you this is the way it works.
Paul,
when you go into court.
They can serve you by just taking it to your door. You can serve.
I'm telling you, that's the way it is. You don't want to believe it, but I'm telling you right now,
Bruce, Paul, hang on a second.
Done.
Paul, I saw it as an opportunity to get this evidence into the public domain through the judicial. That was my objective. That's why I was glad she served me. I thought it was an opportunity. I had no idea how well this was going to be manipulated. I had no idea that Wisconsin has these peculiar rules. But it turns out that there's now another opportunity to submit this to the Supreme Court, that they make them all uniform and vitiate the unjust judgments against me, which I would like to believe is going to happen. I appreciate your skepticism. Everyone knows it's a long shot. Yeah, Mitchell is adding, by the way, it would not have mattered. They put it on your door, you're served. I mean,
no,
Paul, I get it. What I was doing was seizing an opportunity to get this evidence into the public domain. Now, it didn't work out that way.
The last statement I'm going to make, I'm going to go, but listen to me. There are no opportunities with this current system in government. That's the mistake you made. I respect you. I know everybody knows what you're doing, but just hear me. There are no opportunities in this system. I've been saying that for years.
I get it. Ultimately, I mean, is that an incitement to revolution? I mean, how do we remedy the situation? I see.
Heads are going to have to roll. Or we're finished. Thanks for hearing me, Jim.
Okay. No, Paul, I'm glad when you called in. I thought this was a good one. This was a good one. Bruce, did you want to add a further thought or two? Bruce?
No, not on that.
Okay.
I remember going back to the shooting there. As soon as Trump got up, the old crew got in. And remember, Joe Biden authored the first Patriot Act. before the Oklahoma City bombing.
Well, I don't believe Joe Biden. I don't believe Joe Biden authored anything, but I know his name is associated with it. Yeah.
Well,
but,
there you go.
Bruce, I get it. I want to bring in Mitchell. Mitchell, I'd like to have your thoughts about this discussion. I have no doubt you have observations that would be worth sharing with our audience. Mitchell.
Oh, hi, Jim. Hey, Bruce. Thank you, Paul, for all you do here in Slavelandia.
Yeah, Slavelandia. No, I thought Paul's call was excellent. I'm very happy with it.
Yeah, it was. I see the whole crux of the trial that went did not go your way was lost in the very beginning when the judge declared that Posner and all the other folks were basically still private citizens, that they were not public figures or limited public figures. And, you know, that is to me is the whole crux of the loss. Well, because
Mitchell,
they are public figures.
Mitchell, of course. Of course. I get it. They put a squeeze on me where they were asking me to reveal my sources or withdraw that he was a public figure. Of course he was a public figure. The judge would never admit that I was a journalist. If he admitted I was a journalist, it would have been obvious that I should not be required to reveal my sources. Okay. Rather than reveal my sources, which I felt I had a journalistic obligation to protect, I abandoned the claim he was a public figure. But since I had the document experts, all the proof that this was not an authentic death certificate, everything else I had was so powerful. I mean, I'm telling you, that was only one relatively minor aspect. The problem, Mitchell, is that the way in which summary judgments are conducted in Wisconsin is grossly prejudicial to the non-movement, to the plaintiff in the case, and turn the judge, in effect, into an advocate for the movement. I'm telling you, when you read the whole case, you're going to see what was up, and that was only a sliver. This question of whether or not he was a public figure was only a sliver of the whole thing. Mitchell, thank you for your thoughts. Thank you, everyone, for being here. No doubt we'll have more to discuss this. It's an ongoing case, and I'll keep you posted on what happens with the United States Supreme Court. Thank you for joining us today. See you on Friday.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me death!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence...